Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live again tonight. But, you know, we had all this terrible cold, and we were really hunkered down here ever since Christmas. It's never been this cold here. It got down below zero. They said that cold front came all the way down from the North Pole, went all the way down into Florida. And now it's finally lifted the last couple of days, and we're coming out of the refrigerator anyway. But, you know, you can have it once in a while, but I just assume not to have that kind of cold weather anyway. But, so we're live tonight, and I'm going to have a special guest on tonight, too. But before we go on, let me give the toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in and ask questions. And I would like it if people would, if they are going to call in, to reserve the questions for our guest rather than me, you know, on the topic of the show. That make it better. Okay, the toll-free number is 1-888-815-9756. 888-815-9756, if anybody wants to call in. Usually they say they just like to listen rather than call in, but that's fine. We've got a fantastic guest tonight. Now, the guest tonight is Tricia McCannon, and I've known her, I guess it must be 20 years. We go back a long way. That's the thing. When I have people on the show, it's usually people I've known a long time. I think they're the best because you know everything about them, and it helps a lot. But we've been in this business for so long that our paths just keep crossing. And Tricia and I go way back, oh, to the Whole Life Expos, and way back in those early days. Okay, but Tricia, you're there, aren't you?
Indeed I am, Dolores. Thank you so much for having me on in this chilly winter, evening. It's been pretty cold where you are, I take it.
Oh, it was below zero, and it never does that here. But you're in Atlanta, and it was cold there, too, wasn't it?
Yes, all week it's really been in the teens. But today it turned, and it was like a gorgeous spring day, and you could actually walk around without freezing to death. So, you know, I think we have a little respite for a couple of days, and then it goes back into the 30s and the teens next week.
Yeah, but, you know, we're not out of winter yet, but I don't want any more of this, because last January this time we had the terrible ice storm that we were out of power for 8 days. Some people were out for 2 or 3 weeks, so I don't want January seems to be a jinx month, it seems like.
Well, I think it's often like the hibernating bears, you know. It's a great time to do things like revisions on your books and change your website and spend time doing your emails and just catching up on your office work and with friends. So that's part of what I've been up to because, of course, as you know, my new book comes out the end of February, beginning of March. It'll be in Barnes & Noble and Borders and so forth.
We're going to be discussing that tonight, too. You can do those things, yes, as long as you have power.
That's a very important detail.
That's the dirty word is when they say we might have power outage. We don't want that. Okay. Oh, but Tricia, before we get to the new book, I want you to give your background. And I would like to say that Tricia, in her normal, everyday,
Clark Kent life.
Yeah, her regular life, she's a professional photographer.
Yes, for many years, probably over 25 years, I've shot marketing and advertising as an art director and a photographer, and I've been fortunate enough to shoot for, Coca-Cola and Macy's and Georgia-Pacific and Revlon and TDK and Quaker State and many really wonderful companies, and I thank them so much for their support. But, of course, you know, being a commercial photographer is a highly visual career. And my alternative career, I often think of them as my Clark Kent and Supergirl identities, is that, of course, I'm a clairvoyant, which is just another way of seeing, but it's seeing with the third eye. And as you know, I travel, like yourself, around the world and teach and speak and, you know, really I like to inspire people with a lot of the profound mysteries that are finally coming forth in this day and age in a way that the public actually has access to many of these things for the very first time in thousands of years.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You live two lives like that. Like you said, Supergirl, you have your normal life, then you have this other one. Because, you know, way back when we were doing the Whole Life Expos and we were on the panels together, you were doing readings for people.
Well, so I do. I've read for over 6,000 people around the world. And, you know, I know, I think clairvoyants are many times like television sets. They each will have their antenna pointed to a different direction. So some people, for example, like the wonderful John Edwards, who had that great TV show, his seems to be pointed to the fourth dimension, where people who have died and passed on, but of course are living on the other side of the veil, are. My antenna seems to be, although sometimes I do see the dead, it seems to be really focused on who is a person at the highest level, at a soul level. Where did they begin in the higher worlds, and how did they come down, what their journey has been through time? What are they doing in this lifetime? What's their real purpose? Who are their spirit guides? If they have blocks, what are the blocks and what are causing the blocks or the traumas? And furthermore, how can we get rid of them so that they can live a more joyful and loving and empowered life? So I love the clairvoyant work I do. And as you may know, I'm trained in about 7 different healing modalities, one of which, of course, is your expertise, which is past life regression. And I think you're probably the master of that, Dolores.
Okay. But let's tell them a little bit about your background, too, because you didn't just get into this lightly. You had to really take it seriously because your family didn't approve of anything you were doing, did they?
I think that that's very true. I am in Atlanta, and I grew up in the conservative Deep South. My family was very traditionally Christian, and in fact, I have 2 sisters, and my older sister married a fundamentalist preacher who was, you know, in the Presbyterian persuasion. And of course, there are many good Presbyterians out there. And my mom, who I think is a very mystical person, mystical Christian in her own right, she wound up doing speaking in tongues and laying on of hands. And, you know, so my family leant towards the evangelical. And actually, I think the evangelical is wonderful because it allows people to have the gifts of the Spirit, whether it's healing or prophecy or what have you, come through them. So it's not just a theological belief. It's a real vibrating, living tradition. However, as you know, many traditional conservative Christians have a little difficult time expanding their awareness to include things like reincarnation or past lives or holographic repatterning or rebirthing. It's just outside of their corral or their, you know, it's like we're raised in a barn that has 4 walls, and it's not that there's anything wrong with the barn, but if you were to drop the 4 walls of the barn, you'd discover that there's a whole big world out there, and the barn just happens to be part of it.
Uh-huh. But they didn't really understand what you were doing. And you
no.
You did it in spite of it, really.
Yeah, it actually was very challenging. My dad actually was a county attorney for one of the 5 big Atlanta counties and very conservative. In fact, I remember him proudly telling me that he had run Madam Bell, the psychic, out of the county. And here, you know, he turns around and he has a clairvoyant daughter of all things. So I'm sure, you know, it was quite a shock for him. But I, you know, from the time I was a child, I grew up across from a big forest, and I spent a lot of time in nature. And I think that this is something that, unfortunately, a lot of us have lost in our modern-day world with all the concrete and the buildings and the cities, because nature is such a powerful attunement to the divine. And by spending time in nature with animals and brooks and forest, what happens is I think our brain patterns fall into this deeper alpha or theta state where we can begin to perceive, you know, fairies and divas and angelic beings. And that's exactly what happened for me as I began to see these, you know, fairies in a forest and these divic spirits that are like the guardian angels of the plant kingdom. And then these angels begin appearing and they begin teaching me. And they always counseled compassion and forgiveness. And one of the ways they would teach was when I would be frustrated or angry or something with my family situation, they would ask me questions to bring me to a place of deeper understanding and compassion for the people around me. And that was a very powerful, you know, teaching for me.
So you really started this at a very young age, so it was very natural to just develop it. You know?
I did, and I think a lot of children actually are born with the four or five inner senses, you know, clairvoyance, clear sight, clear audience, clear hearing, clear sentience, clear feeling or knowing, and clear cognitive, which I call the clear knowing. And of course, there's also the lucid dreaming, or you can call it soul travel or astral travel. And I seem like I had the sight, some of the hearing. I certainly was very busy on the inner planes in my dream state, and I had, it seems like I was all over the place in my early years, in my, 7, 8, 9, 10, in my teens. You know, one week I would be in these beautiful halls of knowledge or invention or working with masters, and the next week I would sort of have stumbled into what I think of the bowels of the lower astral plane, which, you know, we sometimes think of as hell. And so I was very fortunate when I was 19 years old. I had done a lot of praying that someone wiser than myself would appear that could really help me to figure out where I was, and like a roadmap. And when I was 19, a group of masters called the Viragi Masters, and Virag means truth or detachment, they appeared, and they had just such a roadmap, and they taught the science of soul travel, which is working with the light of God and the sound of God to attune yourself in such a way that you can begin to travel into the higher places and not get stuck in some of the lower places. And so I still, you know, some 30 years later, I still see the Viragi Masters. But they, all during my 20s, as I started my commercial photography career and, you know, really was very busy with that on the outside, my inner life was about meditation and these spiritual disciplines that allowed me to really get control of my gift. And then, as you probably remember, when I was about 30, I was in England, and I was actually engaged to the vice president of MCA Records at the time, and I wound up having a very powerful experience at Stonehenge where an angel appeared to me and unsealed the Akashic Records, which, as you know, is the memory bank or the library where all the records are kept.
Yeah,
and that, it was kind of like I had done my work for the last 11 years, and I guess they figured that I had graduated. And after that, I found that I could really access the soul records of anybody that I met at will. And
is
in
that
the
when you started doing your readings then at that time?
Yes, exactly. And in fact, the first 4 years I did them, I just did them for free at that point. But what happened is after a while I became so in demand that it was really taking away from my photography, so I wasn't able to spend the time to make the money that I needed to pay the bills, and so I wound up, you know, finally starting to charge for my readings. And now, as I said, I've done over 6,000 readings for people around the world. And I do think that when you're, you know, dedicated to spirit, that the work has a life of its own. And
definitely. I know that. I found that out. It does become alive, and it goes off and lives its own thing after a while.
It does, and I think what happens is, just like with you, you know, you've had these amazing experiences with your clients that have opened these incredible doorways and windows into time for information that you can, it's hard to get anyplace else. And same thing for me. When I first began reading, I was only going back in people's records 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 years. And then I made this leap to where I was going back, you know, 50,000, 70,000, 100,000 years. And to my complete astonishment, I found myself in these other civilizations like Atlantis. And, of course, there were many eras of Atlantis. So some of them were like we are, high tech, and some of them were like the Greek eras. They had quite a long developmental range, as you can imagine. And I found myself even further back in Lemuria. And then I began to ask myself, well, wait a minute. You know, I could see my client. Sometimes my client would just be born here, but sometimes, let's say in Atlantis, which was a very highly developed star empire, they would come in spaceships. And so then I think, well, where the heck did they come from? So I would begin to pull the thread of their soul memory and track them up into these other star systems like the Pleiades or Orion or Andromeda or the Sirius A and Sirius B systems. And by that way, you know, after you read for enough people, you, it's like pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. You start getting a picture of what's happened in the history of the galaxy. And I certainly can't pretend to say that I know all the things that have happened at all,
that's what happened with me too. You get pieces from all these people, and you begin to put it together like a puzzle. It can't come through one person, but I think that gives it more validity when you get it through several people and you're all saying the same thing.
I totally agree with you. And of course, then I found myself sort of thinking, well, okay, as I went up, sometimes I found myself in what I would call fourth dimensional reality, meaning that, let's just say, in the roadmap that the Viragi taught me long ago, there are 12 dimensional levels. And of course, we're trying to describe this stuff with words, and that means with our mind. And the truth is, it's way beyond our mind. So we have to just accept at the onset that, you know, there are different people who have tried to subdivide this into different ways. But let's just say 12 dimensions with 12 sub-octaves to every level. That's that 144 we hear so much about, which, of course, equals 9, which because I work with the Council of 9, the 9 primordial waveform energies that create, maintain, and sustain everything, I pay a lot of attention to how numbers show up in sacred geometry. But what I found is 12, 11, 10, 9, and 8 are all what we would call the higher worlds, beyond anything that really we can conceive in the worlds of time and space. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 are all increasingly dense as you go down. And so the laws of physics change as we move from plane to plane and subplane to subplane. But in this dimension, the third dimension where we are, and I think we're probably around the 10th sub-octave or the 11th sub-octave of the third dimension now. But, you know, it does change. We kind of go up and down depending on the consciousness level of, you know, our planet.
I do know we are in a very dense, the Earth is a very dense vibration. And a lot of souls don't like to come here because it is very heavy and very dense.
It is, but one of the things about it is it's, you know, got a great deal of polarity. So you've got the wonderful highs of love and joy and sacrifice and giving and kindness and nature and beauty and sexuality, you know, lovemaking and food. And, I mean, it's really fabulous. But you have on the other side all the abuse of the power and the suffering and the hardship and the strange financial systems that we have here and the control dynamics that many times are oppressive. And, you know, it's a real amazing opportunity to try to hold a high vibration in a lower consciousness, you know, world, you know.
Yeah, that's it, because we do have, like, both extremes. We have the positive and the negative. And
we do.
Some people, they go way over into the negative, too, because they don't realize the difference. But that's part of the planet of free will, though, so we can decide which way we're going to go.
You know, you're absolutely right. And, of course, it gives the soul a great deal of latitude in terms of experience and an opportunity. One of the things I think down here that is so amazing, and Jesus actually even spoke about this, Elaine Pagels, I remember, quotes this in her wonderful, seminal book from 1975, The Gnostic Gospels, how he said that basically human, you know, as spirits, we're up there in the higher worlds and everything looks wonderful, but when we come down here, we get to experience the emotions. And the emotional body is the thing that we have to find a way to balance, so that we, you know, learn compassion. And many times we learn it through suffering. That's kind of how it goes. So
that's why I try to tell everyone that everything is a test. It's all a lesson. And even if they have bad experiences, which everybody does, what do they learn from it? That's the important thing.
I think that's very, very true. Well, part of my passion, if you will, has been tracking souls from these higher realms. And one of the things, of course, I discovered as I went up to, you know, I would go to the fourth dimension. Well, where was the soul before that? I'd go to the fifth dimension. Where was the soul before that? And so forth. And I finally tracked people to what I would call their Genesis matrix. And this is up there in the 12, 11, 10, 9, and 8. And I discovered that everyone actually begins in the angelic kingdom. And in that place, we're completely connected. We're there is no separation. There's no disharmony, none of that. But as the soul comes down into the, you know, 7, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, in the sixth and seventh dimension, it's still able to hear the music of the spheres all the time. It's still able to be in divine service as the angels are. But once it gets into the fifth dimension, at that point, it receives not only a mental body, but it also receives an ego. And of course, embedded within the ego is that primal lie of separation, which causes us to fall into the belief that we're separate from God. And, depending on what, you know, the Eastern traditions call this adi karma, meaning first karma, adi, A-D-I-T-I, first karma. And through all these readings, I've actually managed to track, you know, three major lies of adi karma. And depending on what, let's say, lie or illusion your ego fell under, it actually winds up affecting the way that you sort of play out the cards that you're given when you come down into the third dimension or the fourth dimension or into this life. And the best I can tell, it's sort of the luck of the draw. It's sort of like everybody gets an army-issue ego, even though we have a very unique soul. But then, you know, we have to find a way to make the soul the master and the ego the servant instead of the other way around.
And sometimes it can take many, many lifetimes to do that.
Indeed. Indeed. You just said a major statement.
The repeating of patterns through many lifetimes, too, before they figure out what's going on. So that's why we keep coming back again and again, anyway.
Well, but, you know, this is a very exciting time, of course, that we're living in, because some ways, well, I'd like to know your take on this. It seems to me we're going into what I would call a graduation level, where people who actually have done the work are going to have an opportunity to graduate to a higher level of existence, and people that haven't are kind of like, well, you know, sorry you didn't make it, but, you know, go back a grade.
Well, I've talked about that on this show, you know, many times myself, but I want to get on to your work anyway. But
okay.
You have done a fantastic amount of work helping people all over the world, and I know you've taken people on tours, too. You used to take them to Dominar in Italy.
I do. I love Dominar, Dolores. I've taken groups there maybe 12 times, and as you know, I have a company, New Age Spiritual Tours, and I've taken people to Peru and Greece and Egypt and Italy and France and England to go to these mystical sites. And, you know, some trips are 7 days, some are 10, some are 2 weeks. And Domenher is, of course, a very fascinating community. I've been going there since 1999. And the last 3 years, I've actually sponsored bringing the people from Domenher to Atlanta to do workshops.
Oh, okay. Because I have met some of them. I've not been there, but I've met the people who run it anyway. And it is a fantastic place.
Well,
but anyway, during all of this, I know you have written some other books, but the main book you were was the one that's coming out right now. Dealing with the lost years of Jesus. But tell us a little bit about, you have written other books too, haven't you?
My first book was called Dialogues with the Angels, and it's so interesting. No matter how many interviews I've done on that, people always think it's Dialogues with Angels, but it's Dialogues with the Angels. And, you know, I think you can order it through my website, www.trishamcannonspeaks.com, through Amazon, and, of course, New Leaf Distribution has it. So almost any metaphysical bookstore can order it if they don't have it in. But that, of course, chronicles this whole powerful journey we began to speak about the angels and the fairies and the divas and the masters, and how what the Viragi taught me, and how their teachings go, and the kind of spirit guides we have. And then the last third of the book is really dedicated to these deep conversations with the Council of Nine, those primordial energies, and what they have said about our reality and where we are in the world today. So, and then this new book, as you mentioned, is with Hampton Roads, a wonderful publishing company of some 20 years. They did Conversations with God. And the new book is called, they renamed it, so it's a little long for saying, but it's still a good title, Jesus, the Explosive Story of the 30 Lost Years and the Ancient Mystery Religions.
That is a long title, okay.
It is.
But, I want to know what made you decide to write this book, because you have done a tremendous amount of research, and I respect research because I do it myself. And I know, well, for me, it's a love. I love research, and I can tell from the way you've written this book, you also love to do research.
I do indeed, Dolores. This book probably has 1,200 footnotes and about a 200 book bibliography, so it's very academically sound.
Uh-huh. What made you decide to write on this subject?
Well, you know, as I've traveled and spoken around the world, and you may know that I teach a mystery school, and people always say, how can I find out more information and so forth. So I came off the road a few years ago to write a book actually about world prophecy and what was happening, and I got about halfway into that book, and I thought, well, wait a minute, you know, I can't tell them all this very complex, amazing stuff until I give them a better background. So I started over, and I started another book, which was by the time I was done, it was about 600 pages, and it was called Decoding the Mysteries of the Ages, and the subtitle was The Secret Teachings of Jesus, Isis, Horus, and the Masters of the Far East. And
that's a big topic, all of
very,
that. That's a lot.
Very big. So in that book, I began when the priestesses of Isis first contacted me when I was about 27 or 28, and then I went on to study with them for many years, and they contacted me on the inner planes in the dream state first, and then later on the outer plane about a month later. And then, you know, I was invited to study with them, and coming from such a conservative Christian background, I was a little scared. I was a little reluctant. I was like, I didn't really want to go down the path of witchcraft or anything like that, and so I really had to I had to discover who the goddess, the divine feminine, was for myself. And so what happened really with the Jesus book, in the book, about the third or fourth chapter, I put three little chapters in on Jesus into this bigger book about his lost years, his secret teachings, and why he came between the age of Aries and the age of Pisces, which was a very important thing that he did, his timing. It was very deliberate. And then I went on to write the rest of the book. Well, I kept coming back and thinking, well, I just have to tell them this. I bet they don't know this. And before I knew it, I had 200 pages on Jesus inside of this larger book. And so, and I'm sure you know, because you've written so many wonderful books yourself, how they kind of have babies, you know?
Oh, yeah, they spin off.
They spin off. So you're dealing on this very multi-scale level. So I remember I was laying on the floor of my office one day. It was around that lull between Christmas and New Year's where I usually used to write. And I had my hand over my forehead, and I was thinking, Mamma mia, what in the world am I going to do, you know? And suddenly I became aware that Jesus was actually standing over me in the room. And Dolores, I'll tell you, you know, I think Jesus is great. I love him, and I've had a lot of encounters with masters, but I've only really encountered him directly one other time, which was powerful. And he said to me, I mean, he was so joyous and so light-filled. There was none of this heavy sorrow and suffering and none of this baggage that comes along with the church. He was magnificent. And my heart, he just opened my heart chakra at such a big level. And he said telepathically, I want you to write a book about my lost years and secret teachings. There's been enough war and bloodshed in my name.
Mm, perfect. Mm-hmm.
And I said,
who are you talking to?
I said, well, could I finish this other book first? I'm so close. And he smiled and just kind of waved his hand like, don't worry, it won't take but a moment. I'll open every door. And I, you know, then I thought, well, okay, maybe I could put aside the other book and do this book first. You know, how hard can it be? Famous last words. Three years later. Yeah, 3 years later. Well, I guess a moment in the mind of God is very different from one of our human moments.
Yeah, their sense of time is totally different than ours.
So I said, okay, and then, of course, then it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks, like, holy smokes, you know, if I write a book that is out coloring outside of the lines of, let's say, that barn, you know, I hope I won't get burned at the stake or something. And so being like you, a very arduous researcher and wanting to make it, you know, not a channeled book, but a historically solid book, I I already knew a great deal because, of course, all the time I had been studying the Egyptian mysteries, the Jewish mysteries, the Celtic mysteries, the goddess mysteries, the mysteries from the Far East. The whole time, having the family that I did, I had always kept Jesus in the periphery of my vision, and I had been integrating, you know, my whole life. And so I saw how they were all connected. And I think that that's one of the things that it was only later I really realized, because at the time when Jesus asked me, I thought, are you kidding? I'm like, I'm no Bible thumping, you know, Bible quoting, toting person, you know, I'm a metaphysician. And, you know, he smiled, and it was like the very reason that he chose me was because I think I do know about the other mysteries, and I saw how everything fit together. So I wound up, you know, going back really and doing a huge, creating these beautiful PowerPoint presentations on the Egyptian mysteries, the Jewish mysteries, and then the Christian mysteries. And then 6 months later, I rolled up my sleeves and really began the book in earnest. And that in itself has been a very profound initiatory journey for me, and really life-changing, to be honest. I very quickly discovered that the thread that moves through all of this is the Great White Brotherhood, mm-hmm. and that the sages and the masters of many lands had actually awaited his coming, and that he had been prophesied by five different groups. The Druids, who talk about the fact that there was a god that oversaw a much further back age, and then the god of the age that they were in at the time of Jesus was, I think, Beli.
Yes.
And then the god that they said was coming was called Yeshu. Now,
yes,
what are these?
Yeah, the Druids were the only ones, I believe, that the name came very close to what it really was.
Exactly.
In their prophecy.
Exactly. And of course, Buddha had predicted that there would be a second Buddha. He said a perfectly realized being that would come 500 years after he had been born. And Jesus was accepted and acknowledged by the Buddhist and Rajagira for being that person. And then if you go to the Mithrans believed in the Sarashant. The Zoroaster had prophesied that this Holy One would come in three separate incarnations, and he called him the Sarashant, and Zoroaster believed that he was kind of the forerunner to the Sarashant, and Jesus was acknowledged as the first of those incarnations. And then when we come to Egypt, of course, the entire Egyptian religion was, especially the temples of Heliopolis, which was the center point, really, of the entire Egyptian religious system, was dedicated to the Divine Mother, the Divine Father, the Divine Son, and the periodic return of this Divine Solar Lord that would come back. And they called him the Phoenix or the Banu Bird. And, of course, in Christian symbolism, the Phoenix became one of the chief symbols for in the early centuries of Jesus.
Okay, it was way back, because I know he was symbolized. Oh, there's a caller. Okay, when they make that beep, that means there's a caller online.
Oh, that's
okay, is somebody there?
Yeah, hi, Dolores. Hi, Tricia.
Hi, who are you?
Hi, I'm Helena, and I'm listening to you talk and loving it. And then you said Great White Brotherhood, and my ears totally went up. And I was wondering if you would talk about them a little bit more. Years ago, I used to, when I lived on the beach in California, I used to call on them and go up and visit them, and I haven't in so long, and I guess, I don't know, I just want to hear about them, if that's okay.
Yes, indeed. I really love the Great White Brotherhood, and, you know, they're like a brother or sister order to the Viragi Masters that I studied with. They have slightly different aims. The Viragi are about the spiritual liberation of specific individuals. Like they might say, I see she's ready. Let me go in and through teaching her soul travel, allow her to get free of the bonds of illusion or karma so that she might achieve what they call Jivan Murti or spiritual liberation within this lifetime. And so they go for individuals. The Great White Brotherhood is really committed to the upliftment of all of humanity. They have, traditionally, there were three levels of initiation in the great mystery schools. The first was devoted to the divine feminine mysteries, the second to the divine masculine mysteries, and the third to the integration of the two, because they understood that both were necessary.
Uh-oh, did somebody disconnect us? Okay, yeah, I'm on the air. It's like the little gremlins are messing with the phone lines again and our radio show again. Sometimes they do weird things. All right, but something happened and it zapped her into the other realm, I guess, into the other dimension. But Tricia, I hadn't heard from her in several years, and she sent me her new book so I could read it. She wanted me to do an endorsement of it. And it is absolutely fantastic because it is so full of incredible research. And I have a great respect for research because that's what I love to do. I like to spend all day in a library just looking for one little thing. A lot of people would say,
the same. I'm back on the line. I think you lost me.
You're back. What happened?
Well, I have no idea. I heard a click and I thought maybe our caller had hung up, but
They said she was still there, but, you know, I told them just now while we were off that sometimes the gremlins like to play tricks on us, and they get into the phone lines and the radio shows, and they do all kinds of weird things.
Well, I was chattering away here about the Great White Brotherhood and the mysteries. Would you like me to go on about that?
I think our caller is gone, isn't it, Seth?
I'm sure she's listening.
Okay, she's probably listening, but she's not there right now. Yeah, because before she called in, I was wanting you to tell the audience about the White Brotherhood, because there might be some out there who didn't know what it was. But do you want to continue about that?
Okay, so how far did I get?
Do you want to continue about that, or do you want to talk about the missing years of Jesus?
Well, actually, let's speak about the Great White Brotherhood a little bit, and then we can come to the missing years, if that's okay.
Okay, because we have about 10 more minutes. We've got plenty of time.
Okay.
And also,
well,
you know, you said you would come back on the show again after the book is out and in the stores, too. Because
well,
you've got a wealth of information that we have only just tapped the tip of.
Yeah, I would be thrilled to, Dolores. And let me say for our listeners that I've sort of been in the Jesus cave over here for the last 3 years with the Great White Brotherhood and these amazing mysteries. And I'm coming back out to start speaking. So if anyone is interested in having me come and speak at their church or in their community or their conference, if it's okay, I'll give out my phone number and my website. Is that all right?
Yeah, but when you give the website, spell it out because you have too many words in that website. But go ahead, make sure they understand what it is. Okay, go ahead.
Well, the website is www.TrishaMcCannonSpeaks.com. So Tricia is T-R-I-C-I-A, McCannon, M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N, Speaks, S-P-E-A-K-S.com. And I have a really beautiful site, and I'm in the process actually of building a brand new one that will probably be, that'll be at that same address, and it'll probably go up sometime in February, but the site that I have up is really beautiful now, but we're updating it with a whole another look because I'm adding the mystery school programs and the teachings, which is a whole nother thing that I've never offered online. I've only taught those things in person. So,
you want to give out your phone number too?
Indeed. It's 404, that's the Atlanta area code, 355-2211. And I'm in Atlanta, but I travel, you know, all around the world, and particularly this book will be coming out in America and Canada. So any of our listeners who are there, great. I know later this year I'll be going to England and Germany and Poland, but the next few months is all about the launch of the book. So I welcome any calls for anyone who's interested.
Are you going to be taking pre-orders, or is that going to be up to Hampton Roads?
Well, you know, they can go straight to the Hampton Roads website, which I think is HRPub. You can just put in Hampton Roads, and I'm sure it'll come up. And you can pre-order the book. We've had to cut, it's about 450 pages, but when we cut 200 pages off, if you can imagine. And
yeah,
you
was telling me that it was ready to go, and then they said, no, you got to cut out 100 pages.
Well,
then they had a history professor cut out another 100 pages. That would be awful hard because to cut up your baby after all the work you've done on it's what do you leave in and what do you take out? It's very difficult to do that.
Well, let me say that the first 100 pages was not as hard as one might think. It took me about a month to do it. The second 100 pages I couldn't have done, but I was very fortunate that I was given an editor that was a professor of intellectual history at one of the leading universities in the Northeast, and their focus was on Christianity, comparative religion, and Neoplatonism, which is basically the mysteries after Jesus. And so she totally got the concept of the book and became a true fan, and I was very, very fortunate to have her. So, you know, even though there are definitely things I missed, like there was a beautiful section on the Library of Alexandria and the whole city and so forth, and some of that's still left in there, she did a masterful job in the last 100-page cut, which I don't think my heart could have stood doing it myself.
You can always put that in another book, the part that was cut out.
Yes, yes, indeed. And in fact, you know, I do have this book on the Divine Feminine Mysteries, a book on the Tree of Life, a book on Hermetics, and two or three other books that I'm sort of working on. But the first thing for me is really getting the word out about this. I even have 200 pages put to the side on the secret teachings of Jesus.
Well, that's why you can take the part that's been cut out and put them into something like that. That way it's never lost. It's always there to be used.
Well, if you'd like, what I can do, we can schedule another time. I know you're going to be busy traveling. We can schedule even another time in February or March, if that works for your schedule to do another interview. And
because you have a wealth of information, and I know we're just touching the very, very tip of it here. So there's many things you can talk about. So, you know, we can do it again another time.
Well,
but
the Great White Brotherhood is a fascinating subject, and it's one that I would love to be able to respond to, whether we do it in this evening or we do it in another one, because they definitely were behind Jesus, and they were very supportive of his ministry, and they are still active on the planet today, and I have no doubt that they are behind this book.
Yes, they're the ones that were probably leading you to the research and telling, you know, so you would know where to find the information.
Well, you know, I've wound up getting access to some of the 560,000 documents hidden in the Vatican that most people have not been allowed to see. And I can't say I got access to 560,000 of them. I got access to about 14 very key documents. And many of those are, or excerpts of them are included in this book. I also wound up getting access to a very rare manuscript that Joseph of Arimathea had brought to England, and it was buried at Glastonbury Abbey and came to light in 1184 during the Great Fire in Glastonbury Abbey, and it's only been in the last few years that a portion of those records have been published, and they chronicle Jesus in Glastonbury or in England, and also Joseph of Arimathea's early meetings with the Druids that allowed him to be given the 12 hides of land around Avalon. So the book is, you know, like I said, it's got some extraordinary documentation in it, and it makes sense. I mean, it resonates in a way that helps people to realize how the magnificent journey and the level of commitment and dedication that Jesus had in his life in service to mankind. And that's really the service that I've had in writing the book, and it's been my great honor to be a servant of the light in such a way that I could maybe light that lamp of knowledge and heart for other people. Particularly, I think, after the kind of, you know, some people are very soured by Christianity, and it's completely understandable. I certainly am one of those people who have been, because I've seen so much wrong done in the name of religion. And
definitely.
So,
but that's it. We're not, you know, they say, well, we're working with the devil, et cetera, et cetera. There's nothing wrong with wanting to know more and to do research, and we're, Jesus was a wonderful person, and it doesn't take away from him, if you go into the history and find out more about him, to really understand him. I don't think it does, it's nothing wrong with that at all.
No, and it doesn't at all. And in fact, I think one of the things that is a barometer within every human heart is a desire to know God and to be known by God. And of course, the divine, however we conceive of the divine, divine male, divine female, all of the above, you know, the divine intelligence, the architect of the universe, it yearns for us to know it and with love. And so, you know, the search for truth is really the search for our connection with the source of all things. And many people have different names for it, but at the end of the day, it's that divine intelligence and that divine pervasive love that creates the universe.
Yeah, I've always believed that God wouldn't punish anyone just because they wanted to ask questions and to know more. That's what it's all about. It's all about mysteries, and no one will ever really know God because he is the greatest mystery. But it doesn't do us any harm to ask questions and to search. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's totally true, and it's one of the reasons why I love doing readings for people. And like I said, I've done them for people all around the world, but you know, most of us come into this lifetime with the veils pulled, so we only know this life. We might have fragmentary memories or glimpses of other places, but it's hard for us to put it together. And one of the powerful things about these soul readings that I do is it's like getting the eagle's position above the pattern, and you can see the journey of the soul through time, what we've mastered, what we're still working to master, you know, where we're stuck, where what our higher purpose or vision for our life is. And so, you know, if any of our listeners out there are moved, I'm actually in town for the better part of the next 2 months before I start traveling again, and I am doing readings for people, and I can arrange to do them over the phone.
Okay, you can do them over the phone then.
I can. It's always nice to do them in person, but about half my work is over the phone, and I just have people send me a couple of photographs of themselves and, you know, their birth information, and I can pull up their soul records and read them and record everything, and it's all interactive with them over the phone, and then I send them back the pictures and the tape of our session with, you know, both of our voices on it. So
You do have to have something like that you can look at.
Let me say, generally speaking, I say that I do, simply because it's a big Akashic Records out there. But there are times when I've been able to read for people without it. But it's just a lot easier. It's like a homing beacon for me. And I ask people to do that. But, you know, if somebody absolutely didn't have any picture or any way of getting it, if they can talk about a person for a couple of minutes, and I'll start getting the lock-in on their field. And I'll describe it, and once I'm sure I've got the lock-in, then I can pull up their soul records, pull up my client's soul records, and cross-correlate them so I can track people through time together and see how they've known each other and what their karmic agreements and interactions have been. So it's pretty powerful.
Okay. So we're coming to the time we're going to have to stop. But so if people want to contact you, you want them to either call you or go on your website and contact you through the website?
Let me say the website is wonderful, and you'll enjoy looking at it, but just call me. I'm definitely a phone girl. I know there are people who live and die by email, but it's better to catch me on the telephone, and you can just call, and if you don't get me directly, just leave your name and your telephone number, and you know, within a day or so, I'll get back with you.
And if anybody wants to call Trish and ask her about, you know, being on at a conference or any kind of a speaking engagement, they can also call her at that number. Give out your number one more time before we go off the air.
I'll give you two numbers, 404-355-2211, and that rings directly at my business, and if I'm not at my business, it rings at my home, and there's an answering machine. And if you're completely desperate and you can't get me after a day or two, you can call me on the cell phone, and that's 404-786-9634. And of course, when I'm on the road, that's how people usually get me. And usually you'll get me one of those two numbers, unless I'm, you know, in the middle of a session for somebody, and in which case I don't pick up the telephone, but just leave your name and number and I'll get back with you.
Okay. Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour now. And I want to thank you, Tricia, for being on.
Oh, Dolores, this has been so fun, and it's passed like, you know, 10 minutes with a little fireside chat.
It always goes so fast when we're on the air. But I want to thank you for being on. And
thank you
so much. Good night to everyone, and thanks for listening.
And Dolores, call me back, and we'll schedule the White Brotherhood and the Lost Years of Jesus, okay?
Okay, I will.
Lots of love, and thank you so much.
Good night, everyone.
Blessings be.